$100. Add additional package value discounts, and you could get up to a total of $1,350 off. That's a lot of muscle for the money. You also get some great safety features in your new Dakota, like dual airbags. The entertainment isn't bad either, thanks to an AM/FM radio with cassette. So don't miss the National Dodge Sale, where for a limited time, it has never been so easy to get into a Dodge Dakota and Magnum Power, thanks to a total of up to $1,350 off. $500 list price discount on select regular cab V6 models plus $650 to $850 package values based on values of package items versus package list prices. Always use seatbelts. Rearward facing child seats cannot be used in regular cab models.
Turn down the sulfur pit.
Yes, sir.
Almost has the ring of a Tony Orlando song, doesn't it? Throw another intern down the sulfur pit. We'll appease the gods and then the weather won't be as bad as it's been. 44 degrees here, folks. Hi, my name is James Lilacs, and I believe the lie. This is The Diner. At KSTP, The Diner at the end of the dial, and chopping up this week's fresh batch of loose meat sandwiches, of course, is Jeremy. Jeremy does not believe the lie. Actually, Jeremy doesn't even know what the lie is.
Oh, I'm sure there are a couple lies.
And there's probably a small percentage of the audience out there who has any idea what I'm talking about. I don't believe... Did I say that I believe the lie or I don't believe the lie?
You said you believe the lie.
It'll be months before I find out. That's what I love about this time of year. All of your favorite television shows decide to leave you with cliffhangers. It's a good thing the talk radio hasn't followed up on this. That sometime in May or June, a host just poses a question and doesn't say anything for the next 3 months or so, and we have 3 months of repeats before we go back. It's not going to happen here. Nope, every day, baked up fresh for your delight. If you'd like to join the diner, drop by. There are, of course, booths, stools, and no tables available. The number here is 646-8255. 646-TALK is the old nickel-pointed rotary phone at the end of the hallway there. 1-800-962-0792 if you're outside of the metro area. And Octothorpe, pound 1500 on the AT&T or wireless services. Let's see. We have Lance hanging on here, coming in early today, and we'll get to Lance in just a second. But first, the first thing we have to do here Monday at the diner is recalibrate our sense of humor. It's entirely possible that over the weekend you got slack. You laughed at things that maybe weren't that funny because you were in an expansive mood. Well, let's recalibrate. Luckily, we have every Monday published in the Pioneer Press 3 jokes, and I say jokes as a technical description, by Mark Russell, bow-tied, annoying pianist from Washington, D.C.
Whose songs all sound the same.
That's the Capitol Rag! All right.
So, Mark, I'm ready.
We've got three. If these are funny to you, you need to adjust your humor calibrations. They're called, the 3 jokes fall under the rubric, Goodbye, Mr. Fat. Today's annoying statistic is that 35% of Americans are overweight, fat, porky, obese, can't see their shoes, have a picture of Marlon Brando in their refrigerator, whatever. That's actually a joke.
I thought that was a setup.
That's actually the joke.
Okay,
at
not
that
funny.
Point, they're supposed to be amused titters from the well-fed crowd in Washington, D.C. that's come to laugh because, of course, Mark Russell is funny. Therefore, they have to laugh at him. Joke number two. This 35% is up from 25% 20 years ago. Men, if you don't believe it, try buttoning the top button of an old shirt without having to call 911 because your eyeballs have exploded. Okay, it's not funny. If it was funny, readjust your humor parameters. And finally, this is the third time's the charm. The rule of humor, of course, in humor writing is that the third one in your series is always your payoff.
That's you can only go up from here.
Now comes Zenicel, the drug that detours your fat intake down to the colon, where Mr. Fat goes bye-bye. The FDA has yet to give Zenicel final approval, pending results from the testing of lab couch potatoes.
Let's ask the cooks. We don't like it.
Okay. I didn't think so. If any of those things struck you as funny, you need to fix your humor calibrations and prepare for the oncoming week here, both at KSDP and the diner.
Don't they screen? I mean, don't they look at the jokes that he sends them and ask themselves?
No, people in the newspaper business have no idea what to do with humor.
Okay.
No, it terrifies them.
Well, that explains how
was the last time you read anybody who was in the newspaper who was supposedly a humor columnist who was funny, with the exception of Dave Barry? When? It isn't happening.
Well, you...
I'm not in the newspaper anymore.
That's true. Okay.
And
that's
even
true.
So, it's subject to interpretations. It's a subjective thing. But in newspapers, they're terrified of anybody who tries to be humorous because, ooh, you know, that's dangerous. We can't control that. Those people they're wacky. They're wild. They're out there. That's why you have hacks like David Grimes out of Sarasota or Bill Tamayus out of Kansas City.
Molly Ivins.
Molly Ivins is not a humor columnist. She's political humor columnist. But the when Dave Barry made it big, newspapers ran around and tried to find themselves a humor columnist, and every man Jack they found and female Jill was just a stiff. Lance, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you tonight?
I'm just happy to be here.
Those are the most unfunny things they print every week.
Aren't they just, though? And after Mark Russell comes another series from comedians around the country.
You should read those, and I'm sure we'd get a laugh out of those, too.
I actually may have to recalibrate us on a daily basis here. I just love knowing what other people find laughable, risable, for that matter.
Well, I've seen Mark Russell before, you know, like on the PBS specials and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you crack a smile every once in a while, but boy, I'm telling you, those things, those are just horrible.
That's not a smile, Lance. That's kind of a grimace.
Yeah, you're right.
Over the course of 90 minutes, I ask for more than a smile. 90 minutes of song and that sort of interminable grinning and mincing. I want gut busters. I want actually to be holding my intestines in my hand because I've ruptured an abdominal cavity.
I want that, Lance. Okay, all right. Well, maybe you could get Don Imus, you know, to do like that press club speech again or something. I don't know.
That was actually not all that funny either.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, was it?
The only... What I enjoyed about that, I think, was the hideous flop sweat he must have felt halfway through. Because I've given speeches like that where you know in the middle of it that your audience just hates you.
Yep.
You've lost them. And you're looking at 15 minutes that you have to go, and it is, oh, God, it's the worst feeling in the world.
Wonderful. So what did you think about the big lie?
The X-Files finale? Yeah. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was the last thing I expected, which is why I love that television show. I'm a little... peeved, frankly, at the fact that I have to, you know, all my favorite television shows end with cliffhangers, and so I have to spend the entire summer month in a state of twitchy suspension until everything is resolved in one bombshell after another. But I liked it. I don't believe, for example, and if any of you have not watched The X-Files and have it on tape, please close your ears or go, because I'm going to spoil it for you here.
Right.
I don't believe that Fox Mulder put a gun to his head and pretty much decorated his walls with brain tissue. I just don't think he did that.
I don't either. And it's interesting the way that show progresses just from week to week. Last week's episode, which was the one about the flashbacks and
mm-hmm.
everything, that was a real interesting show, too, but... just the way they end things up, it's always fabulous.
It's a great television show.
Yep.
As somebody once explained, it really is the quality of a movie week in and week out.
Yep.
There was occasionally, and I hate to admit this, I go and listen to National Public Radio. I know I should be listening to KSDP every waking moment of the day, but on one of these shows, to the best of our knowledge, the very name of which gives me hives, they were discussing extraterrestrials, what people believe, what they don't. And they had someone from Entertainment Weekly on describing the show. And it sounded like, it really sounded like a complete fever dream trying to explain it to this studiously serious NPR person what they were talking about. But if you're not of the body, you know, if you're not steeped in the mystery of the show, coming to it from this point and looking at it from the outside must strike you as absolute nonsense. But if you've been following it for a while, you feel lucky because you've gotten 3 years of solid, solid stuff that... It's just a wonderful tale.
Yeah, it's actually 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
End of the fourth season has just come up. And
well, the first was a half season, right?
Yeah, was it?
Yeah, something like that.
I think it was a full season. I've been following it very closely for the last 4 years and didn't want to watch it at first.
I was the same way.
Yeah.
I resisted it for this reason. Because I knew I'd have to commit to it.
Yep.
And at this point in my life, I hate to commit to television shows. I mean, as it is now, I probably have two or three shows that I love tape stacked up, tottering to the ceiling, because I never have the time to watch them. So I resisted. I mean, they're NYPD Blue. I would love to watch it. Homicide. I'd give anything to watch it. Yep. But I simply don't have the time to make for it.
Exactly. I have to budget out that little time each week to watch X-Files and watch Millennium and Star Trek.
See, I can't watch Millennium. As much as I like Lance Hendrickson and as much as I like Chris Carter, it's just too depressing.
Oh, but it's one corker of a show. I'm
walking around the lake on a beautiful, sunny Friday afternoon, and I hear the commercial for it, then, next, on Millennium. And that theme song comes in, and I see the slumping girl in the credits, and I just want to throw myself in the creek right there, face down. Well, we'll
can make you depressed at times.
We have an entire summer to mull this over. Do you go to the Usenet at all to hang around in the X-Files discussion groups?
No, I have not. Again, that takes time.
Yeah. I went there last night, of course, after the show.
Okay.
About 5,000 messages from people who'd just seen it, most of whom were convinced that the show is now completely gone off the rails and is really lousy. This is the part of being a fan I don't understand. At some point, you love a show so much that you can no longer bear to watch it.
Right.
Because week by week, it's obviously made by mere mortals, and you cannot bear that they're not taking the telepathic advice that you beam to them from your little house.
Yeah. And I think there are a few people that actually try to do that, too.
Yeah.
They're starting filming the movie in June.
Yes, they're also filming at present Gojira.
Yes.
Gojira is being filmed in New York.
That's right, which is Japanese for Godzilla.
And I can't wait to see that because I've never seen a Godzilla movie worth watching.
And how many people do you know that would have known that?
Many, and you're one of them.
Okay.
Talk to you later, Lance.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Nothing wrong with Godzilla movies.
I can't stand them.
It's prehistoric WWF.
Yeah, I know. That's why I can't stand them. 646-825.
Couple six packs.
646-825-5. 646-TALK. No, I don't like Godzilla. I'll watch them for Campy Valley about 20 minutes, but they always
get... Yeah, but I hate Camp.
They always got... I do, too. I don't know why I said that. I should be slightly...
Well, it's if it's on and there's nothing else on late at night, you flip back to it. It's a car wreck. You're compelled to watch because people took this serious.
There's always the little kid who believes that Godzilla is actually an agent of change for good.
And it's always some adult dubbing his voice, too. They couldn't get a child to do it. It's always some guy going, "It's Godzilla, look!
Don't shoot Godzilla. He wants to help us." No, he doesn't.
Squish.
He's put his foot through the entire power and electrical supply.
Well, and there's always a great ecological message. Atomic war is bad. Suddenly at the end, there's this huge redeeming value. Yeah.
Tony in Dinkytown, my beloved old Dinkytown.
Hi. I was calling to talk about Mark Russell.
Yes.
I came home drunk from the bar on Saturday night.
Well, it's better than coming home drunk from church.
Yeah. And to kind of let you know how the night went, I was watching Inside Politics in the middle of the night.
I've had nights like that.
And,
you know, they make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
They're really great guys. I like that Bob Novak. I like to have a drink with that Bob Novak.
Anyway, and they had Mark Russell on there.
Uh-huh.
And he isn't even funny when you're loaded.
In a boat? Was he in his bow tie?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was, the only joke that I can remember him telling, he was talking about this Lieutenant Flynn of the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that they should put a big red A on her bomber, a scarlet letter.
Mm-hmm.
And like, well, that is what, I mean, they are charging her with adultery.
Yeah, actually they are. He was probably really proud of that one, too. The more I think of him, when I think of Mark Russell, I sort of think of Walter Matthau and Steve Allen conjoined into one human being.
And they've got him surrounded with like a bunch of, I don't know, 75-year-olds sitting around laughing at him. And they are laughing at him, I'm convinced.
Oh,
not with him.
You have to spend some time in Washington, D.C. to learn exactly how humor-deprived that town is, how humorless it is. And if somebody like Mark Russell can be the court jester, you know, the guy who tells the truth others don't in a witty, learned way, it gives you an indication as to the general level of culture.
Right. Irma Bombeck was a funny writer.
Yes, she was. She's also dead now. These 14 months.
Yeah.
For what she did, she had that genre nailed down cold.
Right. Do you know who Joe Queenan is?
Sure, I do. Yeah.
Who does he write for?
TV Guide right now.
TV Guide.
Oh, really?
He was writing for Movie Land before that. He was writing a lot of pieces for the Washington Post in the Outlook section. If you go to the Washington Post webpage and type him in, you'll find some stuff.
Really? Okay, I'll do that because I've looked around for something that he's written, but. Because I've seen him on talk shows, and he seemed really funny.
Mm-hmm. His post stuff isn't that good. I think he was sort of worried about the audience he was working for. You also, if you go to the American Spectator website and look up some stuff, he's done some pieces for them.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he's done about two or three books, one of which is If You're Talking to Me, Your Career Must Be in Trouble.
That's the one I'm looking for now.
And he also did a book about directing a movie for about $20,000 or so. He's an interesting fellow. I'm glad he's older than me, or I'd be fiercely competitive and have to plot his downfall.
Okay.
Talk to you later, Tony.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I have the dictionary open to the word rubric here, because I had said rubric, mainly because I just like to say rubric. It sounds like the Jetsons dog describing a man who directed 2001.
Or that cube you do, the rubric cube.
I hate those things. I hated that Rubik's Cube.
I'm convinced there are asylums lined with people who went too far into that cube.
It's no mistake. It's no coincidence that the Borg ship is in the shape of a cube. I don't know. Everybody was compelled to do that. Everybody had to buy one. And then there
was the book, How to Solve the Rubik's Cube. You spend another $5 for a book.
Yeah. And then they came out with additional ones, too.
The triangle, the circle, this monolith.
See, I can't stand puzzles like that. I haven't the attention span for them. And what's more, after about two or three days of trying to line everything up, I asked myself a very, very good question. Why? Why am I doing this?
I got a cheap one and just took the stickers off. And just rearranged the stickers and set it on my desk. And it was all together and people were like, oh, yeah.
You could also buy them as keychains. So if you're driving along the highway...
Yeah, that's what you need when you're trying to concentrate.
And you felt compelled to... I wanted to go to Hungary and personally put a bullet through that man's head who came up with that thing. But they sold by the millions. They sold by the absolute millions. I was reading a piece about wacky wall walkers, if you remember those things.
Oh, those little, like, octopi that you throw against the wall.
They had some wonderful sticky substance.
I loved those.
They were great. And they sold, I think, about a million of them. Or they sold something like 20 million of them. They gave them away in cereal boxes.
Oh, yeah, that's where I got them.
Which was a bad idea, because what's at the bottom of a cereal box?
Crumbs.
Cereal dust.
They came in a little package, though. But it was hard to get them out of the package because they kept sticking to the sides of the package. You had to pretty much just turn it inside out and plop this little octopus out.
They didn't want to go out. They were like the rookie's baby, for that matter. But they said that they sold about 20 million of those things.
I hope rookie's baby doesn't slide down walls.
Well, you're putting images in my mind. Somebody would have to toss it first. They sold 20 million of those. They sold Lord knows how many Rubik cubes there are. Where are they now?
Flea markets.
Is there an entire stratum of the landfill that consists entirely of wacky wall walkers? When the future archaeologists go through the landfill and poke down there, are they going to get this sticky layer about an inch and a half thick that consists of... And then below that, you would find, of course, the Rubik's Cubes, and archaeologists would have to wonder why, for example, the corners of them seem to be shattered. And the reason, of course, is that people threw them against the wall. Actually, I take that all back. Barring nuclear catastrophe, which I'm at this stage beginning to realize is probably not going to happen. Of course, when I was 22 and Ronald Reagan was elected, in my wisdom then, I was convinced that apocalypse was around the corner. What I knew. But barring that, I don't think that the archaeologists 200-300 years hence are going to be looking at this stuff and not knowing what it is. We've got everything on file now. We have all the records. And even if we don't back everything up and we lose a few things, the concept wacky wall walker will make it through 300-400 years from now. Somebody will have collected Wheaties boxes where you got your limited edition Ken Griffey wacky wall walker or something. Somebody will have saved, some toy collector such as yourself, Jeremy, will have kept it.
I wished I had.
There are so many cultural vectors that intersect at the wacky wall walker that this information will be transmitted forward forever. You'll be able to sit on the bridge of a starship in 500 years, and if the computer core is big enough and has downloaded all the necessary information about human civilization, you'll be able to ask it. Computer, read out wacky wall walker, and there it will be. No bit of minutia.
It'll appear.
No minutia will be too small. Elizabeth.
Hello.
Hello, Elizabeth.
I still have a Rubik's Cube.
You do?
I have the one. You remember that originally they were the 3x3 on each side? I have one of those that's just has the four squares on each side, the 2x2.
I didn't know that there were 3x3 models.
Well, I mean, but the ones they had, you know, it had the nine squares on each side. You know, it had three cubes across.
Right, and then they went to the more devilish 4x4.
Well, and then they have the 2x2 ones, the little tiny ones for the super morons. Like, me, they could never figure them out.
That would have been my starter one. I would have liked one that was just one cube, and I could just sort of rotate it in my thumb and index finger and pretend that I'd done
one
it.
One that was all blue would have been fine for me.
Yeah,
well, see, what I did is I figured it out. I took all the stickers off, and to this day, I still have it. It has no stickers on it, and I keep it on my desk at work.
Hmm. And do young folks come along and look at it and say, my, what is that interesting item, or...
No, the older folks come along, they kind of pick it up and play with it and twist it and turn it around a few times and look at it and put it back down.
So now that you've got it perfect, or at least it looks like it's perfect, people come along and try to contrude with your little accomplishment.
Well, I think it makes them, you know, feel good. They no matter how they turn it, they've solved their Rubik's Cube.
Oh, so you've got to configure that way. Well, that's nice.
You know, I had the older brother who could figure out every single one of them in about 10 minutes. So mm-hmm. Needless to say, I hated the stupid thing.
What is he doing now?
He is now a big... making lots of money, computer geek.
Ah, well, there you have it.
And he's socially dysfunctional, so I guess if you could figure out a Rubik's Cube, you weren't meant to be in normal society anyway.
Do you get along with your brother?
He probably is devising a Java program right now so you can play the Rubik's Cube on the net.
Oh, he's probably in some virtual town waiting for me to come through.
You know what else bothered me, Elizabeth? I don't know how old you are, but if you're of the Rubik's age, these little metallic rings that would fit together, and you were supposed to get them apart.
Oh, I hated those. He could do those, too.
I mean, I would look at that, and it would confound, just the very notion of it, I could feel the aneurysm forming in my brain.
Well, you know, it's the worst. You're playing with it, you can't figure it out, you throw the thing down, you pick it up, and you got it apart, and you don't know how.
You have no idea whatsoever.
Yeah. Oh, I always, all the time.
I know. Those are the things you give to children in the back seat on long car trips.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised that more kids just didn't bolt from the window and throw themselves, you know, in terror at being stuck back there for 4 or 5 hours with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, worse than that, like I said, you just have the sibling that knows how to do it, and they sit there and say, come on, it's easy. Do you do it just like this?
Mm-hmm. So we're back to your brother again,
Elizabeth.
Oh, well, I
love him dearly. I just speak to him about once every 6 months, so it's a very nice arrangement.
Is he around here?
He lives about 4 blocks away from me, actually. I'm serious, and he's never been over.
He's never been over?
No. Nope.
Why? Did you shoot him once?
No, he's off in his own little world with his wife and his child, and he's very happy there, and everybody in the family refers to him as Mr. Dysfunctional.
How does he have an avatar?
He's 29, and he's you know, his valedictorian and the national merit and the whole works. He's too smart. And
how old is the child?
His own good. Huh?
How old is the child?
Actually, it's his stepdaughter.
Okay.
She's like 14.
Oh, okay. I was just going to think if it's a year and a half, he may have got the kid speaking Latin or something, or doing Latin palindromes just for amusement.
I'm sure he's encouraging her by now to do that, though.
Lordy. Well, next time you call him, tell him to call us, because we always like to hear from computer geeks here.
Oh, good luck. He'd say, who are you?
Elizabeth.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Elizabeth.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Talk to you later. And let's go over to Ted in a car phone. Hey, Ted.
Hey, I hear you talking about the Rubik's Cube. They came out with another one that was even worse.
Oh, no.
It wasn't even a cube.
What was it?
It was a flat set of panels. I think it was 2x4. So there's a total of 8 panels, and they were all wrapped up with fishing line, you know, like 40-pound fishing lines, but you could twist them, and there's like 4 concentric rings of different colors, and if you moved the panels around, you would mess up the colors like you would the cube.
Mm-hmm.
But then trying to get it back, you know, you'd have this oddball, it would make a whole bunch of different weird shapes, and you usually ended up breaking the fishing line before you solved the puzzle. unless you were this previous caller's brother.
Right.
You'd end up breaking the fishing line first.
Right.
And it was bizarre. That one was suitably called Rubik's Revenge.
Was this also from Mr. Rubik?
It was also from Mr. Rubik.
Because you know the pressure to come up with a follow-up had to be tremendous.
It had to be, and that one was just bizarre. I think he was a professor at a college someplace, and the Rubik's Cube he did himself, and he challenges students in each of the other cases to come up with a more complex model that had more possible combinations with the colors, and it was like, so it was like one of those. I think it turned out being like one of those rip-off projects.
Wasn't he on the bad side of the Eastern Bloc?
I have no idea who he was.
For some reason, I think he was, and I often used to think that this perhaps was some sort of Soviet plan to bring us to our knees, to make the foolish Americans waste their time doing this.
The Revenge was actually called the Lynx, originally.
The Lynx.
I had one. Why do you think, where do you think wholesale slaughter came from?
Well, there you go.
Having to figure one of those out.
I'm convinced of it. I think Mr. Rubik came from Hungary or something before Hungary was free. And, you know, an update on the capitalists will sell us the rope we hang them with. It's we'll sell them the rope they'll hang that they'll want to use to hang themselves. Hmm. Well, thanks for calling, Ted.
Yep.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. 646-8255-646-TALK. Of course, £1,500 at the car phone. I'm trying to think of other puzzles that I had. My parents did not indulge me when it came to puzzles. Mostly it was games. I think I had every... It was the golden age of board games.
Yeah, Candyland, yeah. Snakes and Ladders, or Chutes and Ladders.
Uh-huh. And I'm not,
Life.
And I'm not saying kids today don't know what it's like when they don't have Uncle Wiggily's Hoppity Patch game. No, kids today have X-Wing and TIE Fighter and the rest of the stuff in the computer, which is far, far better than going whoopsie 1, C2, C3, C up and down a little board with your cottontail marker. But it got us all liking the feel of dice in our hands. It's a childhood in the West. The feel of dice in that sweaty little palm as you wonder whether you're going to land on jail or boardwalk this time. I'm looking at another update here from Lunds. It's Monday, so Lunds has sent me another produce update. We'll get to that and your calls in just a second. Here's James Lilacs at the Diner on a Monday here at KSDP AM 1500.
If I hadn't gone elsewhere, I would not appreciate this company so much. This is Ron Trzynski of the Original Mattress Factory. And I overheard the young woman making the statement to Ray, one of our salesmen. I introduced myself and asked her if she would explain what she meant. Well, she said, we just bought this mattress for $499, and what we saw elsewhere that could even begin to compare with your mattress cost $699 and $799. We hear it all the time. People who shop and compare, feature for feature, dollar for dollar, sell themselves on our mattresses. And that's why our business continues to grow. Why almost half of our business is from referrals. We keep our promises. We deliver the savings, and we do everything in our power to make sure you are satisfied. People can't afford to be fooled. You either have it or you don't. The Original Mattress Factory.
In St. Paul, Apple Valley, and check out their newest store on Penn and 66th in Ridgefield, 641-7576.
Your appliance specialists at Warner's Deli are celebrating big changes with a grand reopening sale today through Saturday, May 24th. Our show floors are bigger, our selection is better, our prices are lower, and our service is unbeatable. Get great deals on the best brands, including Amana, Maytag, Whirlpool, KitchenAid, GE, Gen Air, Magic Chef, Frigidaire, and so much more. Our professional sales staff will show you more deals than ever before. You'll see freezers from $199, dishwashers from $249, clothes washers from $349, ranges from $259 and refrigerators from $199. We've got great savings on air conditioners and dehumidifiers too. Could be you'll find what you need in our super clean reconditioned appliance area. Whatever your appliance needs, you'll find your best deal at Warner's Deli today through Saturday, May 24th during our grand reopening sale. No matter what brand you're shopping for, whether it's Amana, Maytag, Whirlpool, KitchenAid, GE, Gen Air, Magic Chef, or Frigidaire, no one will work harder to earn your business than your appliance specialist at Warner's Deli.
Instant information available at your fingertips. Call CityLine at 645-6060. No waiting for what you want.
So sorry. Please hold.
Call CityLine 645-6060. Use your touchtone phone for instant news, stock market reports, weather, sports, entertainment, and more. Over 2,000 categories of information on CityLine. 645-6060. CityLine is sponsored in part by Menards. Whether you're building a home or just remodeling one room, Menards has everything you need and more at the area's guaranteed lowest prices. So if it's building materials, new cabinets for your kitchen, or bath floor coverings, plumbing supplies, or any item for that do-it-yourself project, including the tools to get the job done, make Menards your one-stop headquarters for all your do-it-yourself home improvement needs. It's not who you know, it's who you call. Don't get stuck on hold. Call CityLine 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. 645-6060.
I got a glass. Got a nice glass of milk here. And it's not putting me to sleep. I don't know why people drink warm milk to put them to sleep. Is there any particular soothing properties of it, of milk, that's supposed to induce somnambulism?
I think it's so gross you just want to go to sleep to stop thinking about the taste.
If it's the calcium, then couldn't you just microwave a bone and gnaw on that for a while? James Lilac's back here at the diner, and we go to Joel from Fridley. Thanks for calling, Joel.
Hi.
Yes,
sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
I was going to tell you how I solved the Rubik's Cube.
Well, this being radio, I can't wait for you to give it a try.
Well, what happened was my brother is a CPA.
Mm-hmm.
He was down for the weekend, and he was fooling around with that thing for, well, I don't know, about 6 hours.
This recently?
No, this years back.
Years ago.
Yeah. And anyway, I'm a kind of a mechanical inclined person.
Mm-hmm.
So when he went to sleep, I took it all apart. I mean, disassembled it and reassembled it with everything correct. And then that next day, he looked at that thing and kind of astonished, and then he fooled around with it the rest of the day. The same night, next night, I did the same thing and reassembled the thing.
Uh-huh.
I never did tell him what happened.
That makes perfect sense.
Well, that's how it works. I mean, if you push it on the corners up, then you can take it apart.
Mm-hmm. So this is like the child who learns how to become a mechanic by taking apart clocks and putting them back together. You now know the soul of Mr. Rubik. You know how he works. You know how he thinks.
No, I don't.
Oh.
I have no idea. But we had a good time doing it.
Well, where is it now?
The Rubik's Cube?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
See, that's what I mean. There's got to be 20, 30 million of those things. An entire strata of the nation's landfill is given up to little multicolored cubes. And I'm guessing 99.9 of them are not in the position yours was.
Well, I have no idea. Mine was after you did that. I mean, it was screwed up again, so I don't know idea what happened to it.
Well, I appreciate your ingenuity, and thanks for dropping by.
Well, thanks a lot.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. 646-8255, but you knew that, didn't you? Kevin, on a car phone.
Hey.
Hey, you sound like you're not going anywhere.
No, I've actually stopped and took a moment to speak with you.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I have one of the original Rubik's Cubes, and what I mean by that is after, like, the first year or year or two of production, they used to print in plastic Rubik's Cube on the center white cube,
mm-hmm.
directly on there.
Mm-hmm.
In later years, they got cheaper, and they printed Rubik's Cube on a plastic sticker,
mm-hmm.
which then they put over the white sticker. And after a while, that would wear off, because I saw friends who had those, and that Rubik's Cube would wear off.
Mm-hmm.
Where mine was actually on there. And I have it in mint condition, sitting somewhere. I have no idea.
It's probably worth tens of dollars.
Yeah. Probably is worth nothing.
Hmm.
I mean, it's somewhere, but I've got it in mint condition.
Now, did you buy one of these things because it seemed at the time that it was a cultural imperative that you had to have it, that if you didn't, the Rubik's police were going to come by and cite you? I mean, I bought mine with no great love of the thing. I bought mine, you know, not wanting to do it at all, but somehow not to have a Rubik's Cube was to be not with it, not part of the cultural flow.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
And I also, well, of course, I also bought it with the inflated idea in mind that it really couldn't be that hard, and I, you know, mm-hmm. I wanted to be the first on my block to solve it, and it only took about 3 hours to wash that idea away. And then it just became kind of a cultural icon thing.
The more I think about this, the more I think that perhaps there was a catastrophic collapse in our collective self-esteem somewhere around the time that stupid thing came out, because adults all over the country were trying it. Juveniles, kids, everybody was trying it, and then at one point, we all realized that one four-year-old on the Johnny Carson show had done it so fast that, they had done it in 5 seconds. And everybody, the entire nation, was rendered stupid. It's like a judgment came down. You're all dumber than this four-year-old.
And it had to be a plot, because I believe Mr. Rubik was from Romania.
Romania, okay, there we go.
I believe he was from Romania, and it was an Eastern Bloc nation at the time.
Okay, so I'm willing to toss out the Vietnam syndrome entirely. I think the Rubik's syndrome, the Rubik's Cube syndrome, is far more deleterious to the national will. Luckily, I think we banished that in the Gulf War. You know why?
Why was that?
Well, what was the Gulf War called? The Gulf War was called the Nintendo War.
That's right.
The push button. Okay. And we all can do Nintendo. So we would look at those cool little grainy shots of the missile going down the chimney and thought, I could do that on my home Commodore system here. And we didn't feel stupid anymore.
No, we felt good about ourselves.
We felt darn good. All right, Kevin, well, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Actually, it was not the video game war. You know why the Gulf War was not the video game war? Because the object was not to save the princess. You know,
yeah, I don't think he would have looked good in the long, flowing robe.
Saddam Hussein did not come out in a jerky, pixelated up and down kind of.
Well, he didn't breathe any kind of fire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or nor did you meet any old man going, "Seek ye the bridge."
Yeah.
Oh, the bridge. Better save that. F4.
Yeah. If it had been a real video game, like
pick up the coins.
The computer games that I was playing in the late 80s, you would have had to hand the golden staff to the elf with a green cap and say Queepa to him. You're typing this all in, and then he'll let you into the room or something.
See, I never had a Nintendo. I had Atari, so for me it would have been combat. No.
These were text adventures. I'll get to that in a second here. Joel in Rochester.
Hey, how you doing?
How are things down in Mayo Town?
Fine.
I was down there a while ago.
Were you?
Yes, and I stayed in the old Kaler.
Oh, nice place.
Well, you know what it needs? It needs a stem-to-stern renovation. It really does.
Does it?
It's got the incrustation of about 3 or 4 renovations. The coffee shop in that place is a classic 1960s coffee shop with the wagon wheels hanging down.
Oh, uh-huh.
And the formica on the counter is rust boomerang pattern. I wanted to carve it out and take it home. I enjoyed going to the movie theater that they've turned into a Barnes & Noble. That's a cool place.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous place.
Because up in the second level, you get to walk and touch the top of the proscenium arch.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's really neat, so... my wife's from Rochester, so we get there from time to time. I actually went to the Rochester Country Club.
Oh, please.
Her father was having a goodbye dinner. We went to the Country Club.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
But, hey, do you remember the snake?
Wait a minute. Yes. Green and white?
Yeah, or they have all different colors. You know, white was always the predominant color, but they had green, they had blue, they had also, and they also made little keychains, one of those. And Jeremy was talking, poor Jeremy could only make the dog and the alligator, as he put it.
What was the point?
I couldn't make the orb.
Yeah.
I failed.
What was the point of the snake?
There was no point. I think it was actually a get back at Rubik, it's a toy for God's sake kind of toy. the whole idea was it was just a bunch of triangles that each had a joint, you know, it was a bunch of isosceles triangles, each
uh-huh.
had a joint, or had two joints on either, you know, on both of the equilateral sides,
mm-hmm.
and you could make different things out of it. You could make a cobra, you could make a ball, you could make a little shuttle orb, and that's all you did. You flipped it around to see what kind of different things you could make,
mm-hmm.
and that was it.
Yeah,
but,
I made a dog and an alligator,
yeah.
That's it.
Did anybody make a snake, or did it already come pre-snaked?
No, you could make a cobra and stuff like that. It came actually wrapped up in just like a square,
mm-hmm.
like a rectangle, rather.
Mine came as a ball, and that's the only time it was ever the ball again. I could never get it back.
There are these stores called Games by James. I don't know if you have them there.
Love them.
And whenever I walk past those places, I just see them stocked to the gunwales with things I cannot do.
Uh-huh.
It's all stuff like this.
But, actually, I grew up in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and I remember seeing what I thought was the funniest thing I'd ever seen when it came out. It was a small run of things. It came out about 4 months after Rubik's Cube. It was called Rubik's Hammer.
Rubik's Hammer.
Rubik's Hammer.
The cube wasn't enough.
No. It was a wooden mallet.
Oh.
Like I said, it had a very short run. I only saw it once or twice in small shops. I think it was probably pulled for copyright. But you were supposed to buy this $3 hammer in which you could destroy your Rubik's Cube and then reassemble it.
I love the ingenuity of the American enterprise system. That's perfect. That's
wholesale slaughter.
Well,
retail slaughter.
It would have been nice if some presidential candidate, because I can't even remember when Rubik's Cube came out. I want to say the late 75?
No.
74?
It was in the 80s.
No.
Yeah, it had to be like 79, 80.
It was early 80s.
Because I was second or third grade.
Yeah, because if it was early 70s,
right.
I was still, in the early, or in the mid to late 70s, I was still holding on to my King Kong glass from Happy Chef. And
yes!
I had figured out the Rubik's Cube.
You know the Happy Chef? He ain't too happy anymore.
Yeah.
I used to, the Happy Chef, if you look at him, had the look of somebody who's really due to be put in Bedlam Asylum again.
He was basically the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Of chefs. If he'd had a knife in his hand instead of a spoon, I don't think anybody would have come to that restaurant.
Yeah.
And the great thing about it was you walked up and you pushed a button and some chef-like aphorism came out of him. And I don't know what it was. There was one. There's one up in Roseville. I don't know if it's still there. There was one in Fargo, North Dakota, on Restaurant Row that died a dog's death. And someday they in the dark of night they came and took the chef away.
Yeah.
And since the chain downsized, I wonder if there's a graveyard of chefs somewhere. If they buried them, Or if it's like they did with all the statues of Lenin, if some rich man bought them and he's got 40 chefs arrayed in his backyard, and he's going to be buried with them like the first emperor of China.
No, I think maybe they were all under purple things. They were having chefs. It was chef-icide.
It could have been it. It could have been it. Well, thanks for calling, Joel.
Sure.
I'm glad you hear us down there, and call again.
Bye.
Bye-bye. What are these patrons?
There's a Happy Chef in Rogers was one of them, and the other guy said that Rubik's Cube, 82.
82. Okay.
82.
What I was confusing it with was another one of those devilish things. And now that I think about it, these attempts to intrude with the
that
minds of young folks go way, way back. This was a square, and the square, I think, was called the Soma Cube. Man, where did that come from? Whew. It was broken into it was a 3x3 on each side, and then the cubes were arranged in different ways, and you had to fit them all together into a cube pattern. You could form various shapes with it. I know my descriptive powers are lacking here, but it's one of those things that when I went back finally to clean up my drawer in my room, every single drawer had one piece of a Soma cube in it. It was just this spore that was scattered throughout the house somehow. I don't know. The games are downstairs. The games are downstairs in the rumpus room, where no rumpying. Where did the word come from?
I still haven't played my Star Wars Monopoly yet. I got to get a group together to play that. I didn't tell you about that. It's Monopoly, but instead of like Boardwalk, you've got Coruscant or like the little like Connecticut Avenue, which is nothing.
Uh-huh.
It's Dagobah,
yeah.
And Hoth are the two nothings. And you run around with little. Like little figurines like Chewbacca or whatever.
Oh, I imagine you would.
You don't put houses up. You put up TIE fighters and then or X-Wings or Imperial Star Destroyers and Millennium Falcons for hotels.
I imagine. Yeah.
It's great. And they're coming out with electronic Star Wars battleship.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a game that really needs an electronic enhancement. My battleship was forever being sunk when I was a child. Rumpus, I'm looking it up right now. Rumpus comes from, Rumpus, noun, origin unknown. We know where rump comes from. Rump, of Scandinavian origin, akin to Icelandic rumper, meaning rump, which is akin to, I'm guessing here, Middle High German, rumpf, torso. So, next time you look at somebody's rump, or think of somebody's rump, or just cogitating the whole notion of rumps, be aware that 600-700 years ago, rump meant torso.
It meant torso?
Rump meant torso, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia from St. Paul.
Good evening. I almost was going to say good morning because I usually call at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, good Lord.
Well, anyway, you mentioned the word soma.
The Soma Cube, yes.
And, well, soma is a very popular word in the book called Future Shock, written by Alvin Toffler.
Oh, yeah, I had that. What color cover was yours? Mine was orange.
I can't recall that it was really orange. There was some orange print on it.
No, that was one of the first books that they sold with identical covers, but different. Just to make it sad, there's a green cover, an orange cover, and a white cover. Future Shock and that weird computer lettering.
I'm quite sure I got the white cover.
Okay.
I thought it was probably some colored print on it.
Well, I'm glad we've got that straight.
Uh-huh. Well, anyway, soma is quite an important word in that book because it is a medicine that each and every one in the advanced new society that we're certainly whirling towards. Every human being has to take that pill every morning.
Oh, no. I think you're thinking of Brave New World by Aldous Huxley.
Well, it's The Future Shock is the only book I read by Alvin Toffler. And in there he calls it Soma Tablet. And everyone has to take that to condition themselves to be happy. Well, we sure could use that now because there's so much unrest and everything. But here is the funny part of it.
Wait a minute. Future Shock was not a novel. Or Future Shock was just a description of how people are finding it increasingly hard to deal with the changes in society, right? We're thinking of the same book.
I'm quite sure that the only book that I had by Alvin Toffler, and in there it predicts that we're going to have helicopters that can turn around on a dime, and in those days you'd have left yourself sick because it was impossible. Well, you know what we're doing with helicopters now. And the predictions in there that say we're going to have test tube babies.
Mm-hmm.
And women are going to be, in the future, the students of the future will laugh themselves sick when their educators tell them that once upon a time women carried these babies in their bodies.
Yes, well, Zager and Evans made the same prediction, of course.
Who did?
Zager and Evans. They were futurists.
Oh, wow, I should get a hold of those books and see how many people that were really, really on the ball in those years.
Their book is called In the Year 2525.
Hmm.
But I really do think that Soma was a drug that Aldous Huxley put in his book Brave New World. Toffler may have been quoting from him and describing visions of the future, but that's where that one comes from.
Well, I was wondering where the name Soma comes from. Does it mean chemical or something?
Well, actually, it's an East Indian leafless vine of the milkweed family.
Oh, really?
That's one of its means. And it comes from the Greek meaning body. And the scientific term now is it means all of the organism except the germ cells. But it comes from the Greek meaning body, essentially.
My, you're so educated, you almost knocked my socks off.
I got a dictionary here. They bought me a dictionary at the diner, Virginia, and while you talk, I flip. So that's where it comes from.
That's
But I think you're
brief lightning over there.
You're thinking of Aldous Huxley. I'm pretty darn sure, and I'm sure that subsequent callers will set us straight.
Thanks. I'm going to try and find my book and see if I'm right on this. But he had so many predictions in there that have come true now that I'm just really, really, really shocked.
Well, most of them were not.
And some of them are not too good. But we're going to be a totally controlled society.
I don't think so. I got to go to a break, Virginia.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. 646-8255. Brian at the U of M is next, and you can hop on if you like to. James Lilac's here. In the year 20... at the diner on KSDP AM 1500.
Oye, tengo mucha hambre.
Me too.
Vamos al nuevo restaurante, Don Pablo's.
There's a new Don Pablo's in town?
No sales mucho, ¿verdad?
Okay, so I live under a rock.
Don Pablo's tiene increíbles enchiladas, fajitas, tacos, rica salsa.
Awesome margaritas, too.
Todo es delicioso.
Of course, Don Pablo's uses 50-year-old authentic Tex-Mex recipes.
Igualito como cocinaban las mamás.
Well, maybe like your mama used to make.
Vamos al gran opening de Don Pablo's.
Don Pablo's gran opening? Oh, you are so bilingual.
This Real Tex-Mex Conversation was brought to you by Don Pablo's, the home of real Tex-Mex food. Don Pablo's, the real enchilada.
Come to the Don Pablo's grand opening in Woodbury, now open at 8466 Tamarack Bay. Don Pablo's, the real enchilada.
Who knows where interest rates are going? At your Chrysler and Plymouth dealers, we know where they're going. Long-term interest rates are going down. All the way down to 3.9%, and they're staying down for 60 months. Not a year or two, or even three or four, but a full 5 years on every new Plymouth car and select Chryslers. Or choose $1,000 to $1,500 cash back, depending on model, which includes Plymouth Neon and Breeze, or Chrysler Cirrus Concord and LHS. This is the savings opportunity of the year. Low monthly payments on the cars you want for up to a full 5 years. Or generous cashback savings you can pocket right now or even use towards your down payment. But don't wait. Even though the term can last for 60 months, this offer won't last forever. 3.9% for 5 years is only for a limited time, and it's only at your Chrysler and Plymouth dealer now. Financing for qualified retail buyers. 60 monthly payments of $1,837 for each $1,000 borrowed.
Let's keep his pressure up.
You're an Army Reserve medic. You and your team have 14 minutes to get patients stabilized and evacuated. That's how reserve training makes you a better leader.
Behind me, you see reservists training in preparation for an upcoming...
You're an Army Reserve broadcast journalist. You write, tape, and report news. That's how reserve training gives you skills for life.
Be all that you can be.
Call 1-800-USA-ARMY. Paid for by the Army Reserve.
Something big is happening downtown. Rudy Luther's Downtown Pontiac is launching in the summer with an Urcoa giveaway. Check out the Urcoa pontoon boat trailer and 50 horsepower four-stroke Mercury motor on Downtown Pontiac show floor. Stop by to register and see the Pontiacs, like hard-to-find Grand Prix, exciting new Sunfires, and the performance pontoon from Urcoa, built with the best materials and state-of-the-art technology for over 26 years. Check out Urcoa's website at pontoonboats.com or visit Don's Sportland in Breckenridge or Mora Marine in Mora.
¶¶
let's go to the University of Minnesota and Brian.
Mishki.
No, that would be my predecessor.
Yeah, I know. That's what I always do to him. How's it going?
It's going fine, Brian.
Good. I wanted to confirm what you were saying about this woman's misconception. She's in some big trouble, or at least she thinks... She took the novel to be the prophecy of future shock.
So it is Aldous Huxley, right? Brave New World?
Yeah, and it's scary that she thought that someone would pen that stuff with expectations of, like, recent future.
Yeah.
Like future shock. Well, I suppose she didn't have a clue, though, about that. But she's a good woman. I believe I know her. She may have been a woman that I met at the Cub Rib Fest last year in downtown Minneapolis.
Oh, my.
But that's just from her voice.
Did you just walk around calling out Virginia until somebody came up and said, that's me?
No, just from hearing her voice again on the radio, because there was a lady shouting for her husband across the crowd.
So what do you do at the U of M before I let you go?
Journalism, I'm going to take.
Whoa. Now are you at the Daily?
I'm not very good, and no, I'm not.
If you want to be in journalism, go to the Daily.
Yeah.
You'll learn more from actually doing journalism than from taking any class.
Yeah, that would be a great place to start.
I mean, I never took a journalism class in my life, and I've had a career that's lasted a little while.
Yeah, because you're a good writer, too.
Well, that doesn't hurt, but there are things that you just can't teach, things you got to go out there and do.
Yeah,
you know,
I believe that.
Like making a fool of yourself in the paper on a weekly basis.
Like this guy, in question.
It helps. Well, good luck, Brian.
Yeah, thanks.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
And let's go to Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hi, James. How are you?
Oh, just fine. It's our Rich.
Well,
Patron Rich.
Huh?
Our faithful patron Rich.
Well, I'm sitting on my regular stool again, guy.
Yes, sir.
I have three separate topics to discuss. First of all, reference tomes that Jeremy needs to add for you if you don't have them available.
Mm-hmm.
One is called Listening to America by Stuart Berg Flexner. Who's also the author of I Hear America Singing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a book that is described as an illustrated history of words and phrases from our lively and splendid past.
Hmm.
And on the cover, there are a bunch of quotations. I will read you one. I will not permit 30 men to travel 400 miles really merely to agitate a bag of wind. And that was President White of Cornell University in 1873, forbidding Cornell's first planned intercollegiate football game with the University of Michigan.
I like that. Yeah. So it's phrases we haven't heard before, not necessarily stock phrases that we don't know the origin of.
Well, there are all sorts of them in there as to where the expression hooker came from. And
no, that I've heard.
General Hooker.
Right, that's what I've generally heard. But isn't there something else that has to do with trains and hooks and the like? All these apocryphal meanings that nobody can... Like jukebox. Nobody can figure out where the word jukebox comes from.
Well, this book, I don't have the listening... I Hear America Talking. I just have the Listening to America.
Hmm.
Quote is, the public be damned. I'm working for my stockholders, which was William H. Vanderbilt to a Chicago Tribune reporter.
Public be damned. That's the. That's a good one. That's
he said this when he was questioned about discontinuing an unprofitable New York Central Railroad New York to Chicago train.
That's no one remembers the stock the I'm working for my what he said now, public be damned
I'm working for my stockholders,
right, and the latter part got dropped off and all that he got tagged with was public be damned.
Yeah, are you familiar with Edward Newman's book Strictly Speaking in
yes.
a Civil Tongue?
Oh yes.
How about The Grand Panjandrum by J. N. Hook?
No.
199 other useful, rare, and delightful words and expressions.
Well, that's all I need.
These are all trade paperbacks.
Hmm. Well, I actually, Jeremy won't buy them because, he's just handling the meat back there. I'll have to buy them myself. And
put them in the lending library.
Just bring them in. Right.
Okay. One other thing. You're talking about journalism class?
Yes, sir.
As an undergraduate, after coming back from Vietnam, I was working for the Washington Free Press when it was one of those notorious underground papers.
Ooh, I've only got 15 seconds here.
And I was going to college, and I was submitting my articles for review, for
right.
grade. I submitted a 28-word lead line first paragraph on a story.
I stand in amazement. I got to go, Rich.
All right,
thanks.
We'll talk to you later, James.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
James Lalix here at the diner at KSTP AM 1500 St. Paul, Minneapolis, from ABC News.
I'm Dave Barrett. It appears that Air Force Lieutenant Kelly Flynn will put on a dress uniform and stand before a military court-martial in the morning. She's accused of adultery, and Flynn's attorney, Frank Spinner, has made a proposal to the Pentagon.